The following segment is a paid commercial program by Christensen CPAs and Consultants. It's time for Ask the Expert on News Talk 1340 and 96.3 FM, KWLM.
And we welcome back into our studios, managing partner with Christensen and Associates, Joel Gratz is here. Joel.
Hey, how you doing, Bill?
Real good. And it looks like a really nice day today, doesn't it?
Oh, man, it's beautiful. After all that heat we've had and humidity, kind of feels a little bit like fall now, which is kind of nice. Refreshing to say the least.
Yeah, yesterday morning especially, I see you've got long sleeves on today. Yesterday morning, started out, was able to shed the long sleeves, but started out with them anyway.
Yeah, no, I love long sleeves. I don't know why I do, but must be that old age, I guess. You don't need that blanket wrapped around you, I guess.
Well, you brought another of your associates and another expert into our studios today, and we're happy to meet him.
Yeah, no, Gabriel Williams. You go by Gabe, of course, right,
yep,
sir?
Yep.
CPA and audit supervisor in our practice. He's been with the firm 8 years, and he comes with a lot of experience. He hails from Iowa, of all places, so we're lucky to have him in Minnesota here. He's a great young man, and thinking about our topic today and the fall we just talked about, for me, the fall is my favorite season. You know, farmers out there are anticipating their crops, and it's going to be, you know, that's just something that is really hypeful in my family for sure. And a lot of cooperatives we see out there doing a lot of hard work, and sometimes there's a mystery to that, and that's something our firm, and especially Gabe, that's actually how we got his experience. He's been a co-op auditor basically out of college, right, Gabe?
Yeah, I worked with another firm for 2 years prior to joining Christensen that we did mainly co-ops. So,
and cooperatives have a lot of uniquenesses to them. So that I kind of chose that topic because I don't lay awake at night thinking about topics, but it's one of those things where all of a sudden I get this idea, and it was actually just a few days ago when I walked by Gabe's office and I'm like, you know, we should do a topic on cooperatives. And no one can see this, but Gabe has no notes in front of him. He's just going to do this thing live and hard. So that's how he lives. So you know he's an expert at it. So,
you know, really our ag economy, that's one of the things that's beginning point was all these co-ops were formed early on, and you know, a lot of them have survived to this day, and some have transformed and whatnot, but it was kind of a way to do business, wasn't it, from the beginning?
Yeah, no, we're very fortunate. Obviously, agriculture is very important to a lot of our economies out here in rural Minnesota, and as you mentioned, cooperatives are not a new thing by any means. They're probably a, quote, old thing. It's a very traditional way to do business. And going back to the beginning of the times, the farms were a lot smaller in the old days, if you will. Not that it was a bad thing. And they had needed to pool their resources on kind of both directions, meaning how do we market our grain better so we all can get a better price, meaning the bulk thing, economies of scale, and working together. And then they realized, well, we can buy in bulk and do different things that way. So the cooperative way of thinking has kind of been ingrained in agriculture and farming probably since the beginnings of time. And some of the oldest tax code evolves not only around farming, which is some of the oldest tax code that still exists, also cooperative tax code. So there's some really unique things that come with that. And I don't want to take all of Gabe's thunder. I'm sorry. I always just kind of keep rolling with it. But you're absolutely right, Bill. For our area, we're actually very lucky, I think, to have a lot of cooperatives. If you do a circle around Wilmer, around our office, I bet you we can name 30 cooperatives in just our little area. So the Iowa area, Minnesota, we're very well known for the cooperative thinking. So we just wanted to talk about a little bit for all the guys and gals out there who are going to start their farming and working with their cooperatives.
So Gabe, but let's start with the basic. How is a co-op different from another business enterprise then? What distinguishes it, I guess?
You're not really talking about customers so much as it's more of your patrons, because you're earning equity in the business as you're doing business, purchasing your services and your goods from that business. So that does kind of make it so you're not just, you know, not involved in the business at all. You're getting equity and getting that paid out once you're looking to retire from the farm or, you know, bring in the next generation to the farm. So you're also looking at economy of scales that Joel talked about as well, where the bigger your membership group, the more rebates and discounts you can get by purchasing from the middleman, the suppliers. And you kind of almost get to the scale. If you get too big, you kind of get diseconomies of scale. If you get, you know, some of these 40 location co-ops where they have to have then another tier of C-suite. But
and the C-suite is?
So your regional managers, general managers, agronomy managers, and then you would need to have like an east agronomy manager, a west agronomy manager, your CFOs, CEOs, COOs.
Hence the C, like, so yeah. Chief. Yeah, that's the concept.
Has that been the trend, though? It seems like a lot of these co-ops are merging and getting bigger.
Yeah, the consolidations or mergers and acquisitions has kind of been the trend for, about 10 years. It's been more... in Iowa, it happened a little sooner than it did in Minnesota just because they're more closely grouped in Iowa. And so then it becomes trying to find synergies in those. And that's the other part of being a co-op is it not only do the boards have to approve of these mergers and acquisitions, you have to then put a proxy out there for the members to approve the acquisition or the merger. And that's sometimes the tipping point is they have differences in when you can retire from get your full 100% payout from there, so they don't want to get to a point where they can both mesh in that.
So, Gabe, when you say payout, what does that mean to the listeners out there?
So, you know, as you're earning equity in the business by doing business with the co-op, a portion of that is paid out in cash every year, but then there's a portion that is allocated to you that is then held in equity by the co-op for... generally until about age 70 or so.
We call it unit retains or retains. You might have heard that word out there. So we, instead of getting maybe full price, sometimes they retain some money for working capital and such, but it goes on account, just like Gabe said, under patron number this, you know, my name. So when I get to be 70, it's all, because I've already paid tax on it. That's another unique thing that we can talk about too. It's already been paid tax on. So a lot of these older farmers, when they hit 70, can get $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 of equity that they pay tax on for free. Yep. So that's kind of the whole what farmers in the old days would work towards. That was their retirement, you know, was that number. So that's what Gabe was referencing when they get paid back in the revolvement.
It's kind of, you know, what we see in the business world, more of non-co-op world, where you would see, you know, you have a simple IRA or a Roth IRA. This is kind of their retirement plan.
Yeah, and if I could add, I'm sorry, Bill, I'm not letting you speak. Sorry.
It's fine. You guys are the experts.
Yeah, so thinking about a co-op difference, the one aspect that Gabe hadn't covered yet, and I'm just kind of like that horse in the background, just ready to race here, governance. So in a co-op, it's one patron, one vote. Whether I am the biggest farmer or the smallest, when it comes to the activities of the co-op and anything where the patron membership group votes, everybody has one vote. And that was something very important in our forefathers. They felt that was important in that cooperative governance so that somebody bigger, if you will, could not influence all by themselves. So that, I think, is one thing that's very unique, if not the only uniqueness. Most places you get to vote by your shares. I own more, I get to have a higher weighted vote. So that is something that's very unique and I think still is attractive to a lot of folks in the world of, you know, democracy and feeling like I have a say and I have a part of the company. So I wanted to mention that. Sorry, Gabe. I think that's something that's very unique to cooperative governance.
What about the share aspect of it? You mentioned shares. Can you buy and sell those?
That's a great question. You want to take that, Gabe?
Not necessarily. Like, there's not like a market for it. There's more of transferring your equity more or less to the next generation, or like moving it from an individual to like if you form a farming partnership. Or
that's another thing that's unique, Jenna. There is not a requirement to buy stock in a cooperative.
Right.
You might have a minimal $10 or something just to kind of get your certificate and all that, but you really don't generally buy stock. So you don't trade them, you don't sell them. So that is another uniqueness. That's very, very smart of you, Bill, to ask that question. That's another uniqueness to cooperatives.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the more unique parts from like co-op to co-op is what is their requirement to earn your equity, like the minimum amount of business or what type of business you have to do with the co-op each year to get your unit retains.
So, yeah, that's another thing, that you get paid more by doing more business with the co-op.
Sure.
Patronage, right?
Yeah.
So you hear that word a lot. So the more patronage I have in respect to another fellow patron, I will get more. Well, that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. If there's $1 million in the pot, but I, you know, through that I had 20% of the volume, mm-hmm. I get 20% of the profits, which I think is, most people think that's fair, mm-hmm. right? So it's not related to stock. It's not related to acres necessarily, except more acres means more volume. Generally, there are more grain sold, more products bought on the ag retail side. That's something that's also unique, is that you don't get paid back unless you patronize.
Yeah. And that can vary from year to year, doesn't it, as to what percent that they're going to pay out in patronage, depending, I imagine, on many factors.
Yes. Bill, it's like I gave you the textbook here to go right through this. This is great. You're right. Every year can be different, and that's one of the challenges a co-op board has, wouldn't you say, Gabe? You know, going through, mm-hmm. they have to look at working capital, cash flow, and in the old days, that's no disrespect to the old days, the IRS says you have to pay a minimum of 20% in cash. Back to my example, $1 million left over, we're going to allocate $1 million to the patrons. In order to make that a deduction and a flow through for tax, they have to pay a minimum of 20% in cash. Old days, that was acceptable. Well, nowadays, as the farmers and the producers are getting bigger and have higher tax brackets, it was actually a burden. So now many co-ops have upped their cash percentage to 45, 50, 65, and we've even seen some 100% on certain years based upon depreciation and other things. So the tax planning aspect and equity revolvement is the most unique and complicated, if you will, to co-ops.
Yeah, it's probably the item we spend the most time on when we're doing our audit exit meeting, is the talking over the book to tax differences and the tax numbers, what the lay of the land is, so they can look at what the cash number is going to be and what makes sense, and give a couple different scenarios on that.
Right. That's our value add, we feel, as our firm, that we think holistically for you and help you and plan with you into the future of what it looks like. And very unique thing, and talk about the equities and the revolvement is not just a no-brainer, look at the wall, and throw spaghetti at it. It literally is a concept, like Gabe said, we spend a lot of time at the end saying, this is what it looks like. We put scenarios together for the boards, like this is how it can be. We talk to the management team, and we take a lot of pride in that, and we really feel like we as a firm understand that and help the cooperatives guide themselves through that.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, there's quite a number of them in our area.
There really is. And there used to be probably double that. You talk about merger acquisition, Bill. What'd you say, Gabe? Probably 5 years ago, when the farm economy was slower, there was that dip in there, if you recall, kind of that 2018-19 period. Cooperatives were experiencing the same downturn, right? And they were struggling and trying to have economies of scale. And there were several co-ops that were starting to merge. And that's when you saw some of these real, what I call big in Minnesota, cooperatives. And as of late, we've been hearing a lot of press releases about certain co-ops talking about it in boards. And there's only been one or two I can think of out of maybe 10 that have happened. Like boards decided, no, now's not the right time. But they've established a relationship now, and it may be easier to do that down the road. Some people get nervous about merger and acquisition. They feel like they're getting monopolized. And, that whole feeling of, are we still a cooperative if we're big, makes everybody nervous. Well, what's the biggest cooperative in the world, Gabe?
CHS.
Yeah,
I was going to say that,
right? They have St. Paul Saints, and they got stuff at the Twins game now. They're the biggest co-op in the world, and they roughly had their last fiscal year, and I don't want to totally misstate this, but they had $1 billion in net income, which means the patrons. So a local co-op is a patron of CHS, right? And then they pass down their equities to our local co-op, who then adds that to their local savings, we call that, to come up with their total net savings, which then gets allocated out to the patrons. So ultimately, the big business, the CHS, which some farmers say have maybe lost their co-op flair just because they're so big and they're international, they're doing all this stuff, it still takes that co-op to do that. And they are still a co-op, and they still allocate their income. They still have their revolvement, just like we do locally. So it kind of walks its way through. And the numbers in our inflationary period here with a retail business, they're enormous, Bill. I tell you, every co-op has had probably success as of late. And CHS is also the same. Like, It was their record profit, $1 billion of net income they allocated out, right, for their last fiscal.
Yeah, and I believe
not this fiscal. I mean, their year end is 9/30 or August. It's August, right? CHS?
I believe so. It's a later fiscal year.
We don't audit CHS because we're just small taters out here. But we get to know those guys just through all working with the other co-ops. But quite a co-op in that CHS program.
Now, did they merge with Land O'Lakes?
Yes.
No? Yeah, that's when they got quite a bit bigger at that point, right?
Yes, that was...
Gosh, now you're putting me on the spot.
Four or five years ago, I believe they merged together,
but it's definitely Cenex Harvest States, obviously, is that was the big one that really brought a lot together. I'm pretty sure now I should maybe stand corrected.
I was thinking they were with them.
Yeah, that was part of... they brought the equities together, so yeah, that was...
Yeah, I should have had... Dustin, my partner who's been with me here too, he's the statistician and knows all that stuff, and I didn't think of asking that question.
Sorry I asked you that, but it just seemed to me like it was something I remembered.
I'm pretty sure Lionel Lakes came with. I'm pretty sure and 100% on that, but I'm human, Bill, right? I can't know everything.
Now, what about our electric co-ops? Now, that's a little different.
That is a little different. Yeah. I mean, we don't specialize in that. Mm-hmm. It's a similar concept, but they are governed under a few different things. Because of the Utilities Commission and whatnot, so I don't want to get too far out there, but they are similar, but not the same. You know, it's still a patronage-based type of vehicle,
right?
And everybody gets credits whether you're just using them for their home, which I do, obviously, for my home. Maybe you do too, Bill. Yep. I think you live in the country.
Yep.
Gabe, you live in the city, so sorry, buddy. No REA for you. But they're similar, but that's kind of how that works. So I shouldn't get too much farther. I'll get myself in more trouble than I already am in, but. So, yeah, that's the co-op stuff, man.
Yeah.
That's another big co-op.
And it sounds like, you know, things are going well then. I mean, but yet they have to know their P's and Q's, too. I mean, because things can turn down if you're not on top of it.
Well, in the last 5 years, we've heard of cooperatives collapsing because of ill-fated decisions on their management team and maybe the board not having their eyes on the prize a little bit. Mm-hmm. Some on speculation, hedging. Can kill you. And during that downturn, everything went sideways, right? So the hedges are on the wrong side. And if someone isn't watching that, it can go sideways on you. So you're right. You still got to watch your P's and Q's, man. When I joined the firm, it seems like a long time ago, about 30 years ago in 96, when ethanol was starting to boom, the only way to sell equity in rural Minnesota was to have a co-op structure. Because a farmer believed in it, understood it. And if you went in there with an LLC or some other concept, they're like, nah, don't trust you. Mm-hmm. So it was even just 30 years ago, it was still the bedrock of how to get economies going and people to group their resources into getting to an ethanol plant. Bushmills and Atwater, our most local, it's a co-op. Now, that co-op came later, so they had some opportunities tax-wise to be taxed differently than a co-op. And in today's world, a co-op structure with a partnership taxation can be very important to you. And in Minnesota, they changed the cooperative statute to have an A and a B, or traditional and a non-traditional co-op. So I'm glad to see that the cooperative world is still needed, but I'm also glad it's evolved so that it still can do and live in today's world of new business, new taxation, new pass-throughs and whatnot. So the cooperative way of doing business, I think, is still legit, and I still think it's very important. And it still means a lot to a lot of producers who need to believe in it, understand it, and understand the one person, one vote kind of concept. So
yeah.
Did we miss anything, Gabe, on the list? That's right. You don't bring a list because you're that smart.
I was thinking just the last one, other challenges that they face.
Yeah. Well, we have about 2 minutes yet. If you can think of any you want to summarize.
Okay, Gabe, make a big finish here, buddy.
I mean, they're still facing the people problem that pretty much all businesses are, that it's a challenge for everyone's reaching for the same resources, kind of, for the people pool. With the co-op world, it's maybe a little bit more, even like farther and harder to get the same people, because you're looking at your GMs, you're looking at your board, you're looking at your agronomy managers to try and find those, and that's been part of the merger and acquisition concept as well, is trying to find that talent through mergers and acquisitions.
I think the boards out there have the decision of, do we need to be bigger, mm-hmm. and why? Should we merge and why? And it shouldn't be we have to merge, right? You see the difference on that, Bill, Gabe, right? I mean, that's how the board's got to be thinking out that far. Like, is there a reason to merge? And it shouldn't be I have to, meaning either financially or I'm getting beat competitively. You have to be still on the edge. And we're not saying a merger, right, Gabe, is the only answer to do that, but it may be depending on what you want to do and where you're structured. So that would be my last big swing for the home run there on that. But
yeah. What about if they decide the board, they want to dissolve the co-op? That'll be my last question. How does that happen in about a minute or so?
Well, I'll take that, Gabe, if that's okay with you.
Yep.
Liquidation is something that does happen, and it's a very meticulous process, and it's governed by their bylaws, and you have to be very careful in how it all plans out. And back to that one patron, one vote, usually it takes a 75% vote to say we're done. And again, big farmer can have a different idea than a small farmer, but it doesn't matter in that deal. There's no question that a liquidation is a patron vote. It's not a board. The board recommends, but the patrons will have to decide. So it's a very slow thing that rarely happens very quickly because of that, for good reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, anything else before we let you guys go? How do we learn more if we want to do... Gabe, if you want to have you as an accountant here, I guess, how do they do it?
Well, I mean, they can certainly reach out by email or give us a call at our local office number.
235-5937. And our website, ChristiansenCPA.com, would be the best. Gabe will have his picture on there. Right? I think your picture's on there.
I believe so, yeah.
So, yeah, look it up. Look him up. Look me up. Dustin Cutterbaugh also does our cooperative stuff as well. I'm sure he's been listening and taking notes on us right now, and he'll critique us when we get back. But, hey, we wish you a good start of the fall, Bill.
Yeah, and we wish all our farmers a good harvest and a safe one, too.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that.
It's going to be really one of the more unusual harvests, it seems like, to me, recently.
Anyway. We all don't know what's out there. Because it's so unpredictable with the dry conditions, and then we had hot conditions, and it's just been, we'll see. Every year is different.
Yeah. All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Bill.